all of this is a mere prelude to the greater glory that awaits us all in the next life.
Can't you do something? Talk to him!
I can! I've tried! I can't get through to him!
You're sick! What does this prove? Does this make you feel good about yourself?
For thousands of years to come, this mall will be a holy place. And you?
Wait a minute. We didn't sign up for this. You go be a martyr if you want, but leave us out of it.
I would. But Zoot has other plans.
Welcome to Series 3, Episode 32 of Conversations on Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
We have episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 3, Episode 32, the screenplay was done by David Fox. It was directed by Colin McCall, and the episode synopsis read out by Tamsin.
The Guardian reveals his endgame to the captive Maw Rats while Luke comes out of hiding and the rebels close in on the Maw.
Alright, to kick things off, a rather gorgeous candlelit prayer room sets the stage for some harsh home truths between Celine and Luke.
I feel so safe when I'm with you. Ryan never really understood me, not like you do. Oh, Luke.
Stop it!
What did I say?
I'm sorry, Celine. The truth is, I'm in love with Allie. I always have been.
No, that can't be. It's me you want. That's why you've been so kind and gentle. Luke, tell me you love me.
I felt sorry for you, Celine. That's all.
So, panel, let's focus on this. How did you feel about Celine making a move on Luke, her assessment of Ryan's love for her, and how Luke handled the situation? Ultimately, do you feel sorry for Celine?
Can I start with the Ryan stuff first?
Mm-hmm.
So she says that Ryan never understood her, and I think that's true, but not for the reasons that Celine thinks. I think the reason why Ryan never understood her was that Celine never let him understand her. She always put a block between them. There was always an emotional barrier between her and him, and it was one that she usually put up. So no, I don't think that Ryan ever understood or knew who Celine was, because she never let him.
She didn't want him to.
Exactly.
You know, she actually had commented at times that Ryan didn't know how grimy of a person she actually was. You know, he saw her in the best light from the moment he met her. And while she definitely flourished in that, you know, that validation from someone who thought she was great, she sometimes you could see it was a lot of pressure on her to try to live up to this person that Ryan saw. He saw her as all good, all wonderful, all great. And you could see sometimes it was hard for Celine because she knew, I'm not those things. I'm actually kind of a garbage person. Mm. And you've never seen that. You've only seen me as all these wonderful things. So she's made lots of comments that Ryan never saw her for who she was. Sometimes she says it in the positive. Like, Ryan never thought I was stupid. He thought I was smart and resilient, you know, and that's a moment where she's happy that he saw that in her. But in this moment, it seems like it bothered her that Ryan never saw her for her faults, you know. But given that Celine will cling to anybody, I don't know how much it matters that she's saying this. It did insult me. I felt personally offended for her to say, Ryan didn't understand me. It's not like he didn't try, Celine.
Mm-hmm.
He gave it everything. For you. He gave you what all of us hope someone who loves us will give us, and that's called the benefit of the doubt. We all want someone who will love us enough to see the best in us, no matter how much we screw up. And Ryan gave that to you time and time again. And so to talk as though he didn't understand you, as though he didn't try, like, it kind of irked me just a little bit.
Not just you.
How dare you? How dare you speak of him like that?
Mm-hmm.
What is Luke giving you that Ryan didn't? Are you kidding me? Yeah. Like, Ryan would have cut off his limbs for you. Are you serious?
Yeah, he would. And she just did not want him to understand her.
No.
She hid so much from her. Even though he did see her at some of the worst moments in her life. For example,
yeah.
You know, her rock bottom at Roxanne's. It's, you know, Celine did so much things that Ryan saw and he supported her.
Mm.
He didn't judge her. He tried to help her.
He understood her far more than Luke ever did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, I would understand this if Ryan had ever put her on some sort of pedestal of behavior he expected her to meet. Like a standard he would got on her case about not meeting. Like, but he never did that to her.
Mm-mm.
You know, as you guys said, he saw her at her worst and he never held that against her.
Mm.
None of us want our worst behavior to be held against us. And Ryan never did that. As you guys said, he saw and he never acted as though this is what I expect of you. This is what I need you to be. And I'm disappointed you're not those things. If that were the case, then I would understand Celine feeling pressure in that relationship to live up to Ryan's standards for her. But he never did that to her.
Mm-mm.
You know, so I really do not like her speaking of him in this way as though Ryan had unfair expectations of the kind of person she was supposed to be. Just because it makes her feel better. Just because it makes her feel better. You know, yeah, Luke has seen her at a bottom too, but so did Ryan. And Luke doesn't really give a crap that you're at your bottom, Celine, but Ryan cared. He was going to carry you out of the well. He was your Sam. Okay. He would carry you up Mount Doom.
Mm-hmm.
And Luke is just like, I just want to make sure you're okay so I can leave this conversation and go live my life.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that makes Luke a bad person. I'm just saying that Luke was never willing to take that responsibility to carry you anywhere. And for you to say this to him as though Luke, as if Ryan was some kind of failure of a man. Okay, mm-hmm. I'm talking about it. It's just making me upset.
This isn't the first time that we're going to see Celine rewrite the history that she had with Ryan. At different points, he'll either be a saint or he'll be a sinner, or depending on who she's talking to at the time or how she feels about him. Not jumping ahead or anything, but this is not the last time that we're going to see her do this. She does it right up until the end.
That's all Celine does is rewrite history.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Constantly rewriting what happened. Things that we saw.
Can you imagine, had Ryan still been there when she lost the baby, even though he would have been mad about her joining the Chosen and everything, he would have been there for her. No matter his own feelings, he would have stood by her. He would have been heartbroken, but he would have stood by her.
Yeah, I'm not sure, though, that he would have, because I wonder if it would have pushed him actually too far. With her joining the Chosen, originally she joined because she wanted to give the baby a good life, look after the baby. But for her to stay on, I don't know.
Mm. No, but I mean, once he just lost that baby, he would have been there for her.
Oh, yeah, no question.
To get her through that.
But I think after that, I don't know, I think that might have been the end of them.
I don't know. Yeah, but I don't know if she would have stayed with the Chosen had Ryan still been there.
Interesting.
It's, you know, he might have actually have gotten her out of that headspace.
I don't know.
So you're saying that if she'd lost the baby, she would then left the Chosen to come with him?
I don't think so.
I'm just not sure what would have happened or what Ryan would have done, honestly.
I think that would have been, I don't know.
It would have been chaos.
I think that Ryan would have definitely supported her regardless.
Yeah, at least at that point.
Even if he didn't want to be with her anymore.
Yeah.
Even if he was just beyond done with her. Ryan had too big of a heart to walk away from someone who he did love and care about. I mean, we saw the way he was with Lex.
Yeah.
You know, he loved Lex. Mm-hmm. And no matter what Lex did, Ryan might spend a day or two pissed off at him, but he could never forsake Lex. He wanted to save him because he loved him. So I feel like it would be the same with Celine. As mad as he'd be at her, he wouldn't forsake her, especially if she were in need and suffering. And in, you know, this
maybe horrible... later, but not at that point.
No, not at that point.
But I can't say whether or not that would have been enough to bring her back from the brink. Because, I mean, we see the way Celine has always regarded Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's questionable, you know, and I can't say that she would have anything he could have said would have held me water. I mean, it's possible. He did it in season one. His support did pull her out of a black hole,
yeah,
you know, because he was the only one. But I don't know if it would have been enough this time to pull her out. It would have just been a tragedy of Ryan just watching her spiral like that and being there's nothing he could do about it. And he's lost his child and he can't even mourn his child in peace because it's all about Celine, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine her telling him it was Zoot, you know, Zoot needed to take our baby? Can you imagine Ryan having to hear that?
I think that would have been a moment he might have actually killed the Guardian and succeeded.
I just say, I'm glad he didn't have to. I'm glad he didn't have to witness his child dying.
Yeah.
I'm glad he didn't have to be a part of any of this. Like, he's getting a happy ending somewhere else. That's what I tell myself.
Yeah, far away from her.
They've made him suffer enough. He didn't need to put up with any more of this. And so, yeah, it's I don't like this. What her she's saying, how she regards him to Luke. It really annoys me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you couldn't have picked a better person to love someone like Celine than Ryan. And she spit in his face time and time again. And I'm not even like villainizing her for that. She's young.
Mm.
You know what I mean? She's still a kid. And many of us have had people that we took for granted when we were kids. And then we get older and we realize, oh my gosh, I never appreciated that person. They were there for me, blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, there was nobody else who loved her specifically like Ryan did. She couldn't have like drawn a better straw in the love department.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Celine's one of those people that always has to tear down all of the good things in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And she's never really satisfied because I don't think there's a part of her that wants more, but at the same time doesn't think that she deserves it.
So she's self-destructive?
Mm.
For shoot's sake, why didn't they pair her off with Ned?
Because that would have just been so obnoxious. I think we all would have died. It would have exited the show. Can you imagine? Celine and Ned. I mean, come on.
I don't want to imagine it. I'm not doing it.
They deserve each other.
As for Luke, I actually really appreciated that Luke just came straight out and said it. Like, because I get the sense that Luke was a little on the fence. He didn't really kind of understand entirely what Celine's behavior towards him meant from her heart. And it was easy for him to tell himself, she just needs support, you know? But in this moment, when she comes out and says, you love me, or, you know, Luke is like, oh, okay, I gotta nip this in the bud. And I appreciate that he did. Straight up was like, no, I'm in love with Ellie. I now see what you want from me. I can't give it to you. I'm not going to give it to you. And it was savage, but he was just like, I felt sorry for you. Okay. I was just trying to be a decent person to you. But it ain't going to happen. I'm not going to be your savior. And I was like, good on you. Get away.
Season one break could have taken pointers from him.
Yeah.
I know.
And season two.
Yeah.
Get away from her. Get away from her. She is toxicity personified.
But I have to say, I do feel sorry for Celine.
No.
I do feel sorry for Celine. And let me just explain to you why I feel sorry for her. So let me just get my soapbox out. I'm just going to stand up and address the audience. So I feel sorry for Celine because I think reading between the lines, you could say that Celine comes from probably a background where she has exchanged, are you my new daddy, for are you my new boyfriend? And I think maybe in Celine's background, there is a parent, maybe a mother, maybe a father, who taught her somewhere down the line that the only worth she can possibly hold is a worth that men because there are a lot, sadly, and we've probably all met them, there are girls and women out there who do completely structure their lives around if they have a boyfriend at that time. And they're the sort of girls that kind of blow off their friends because now they've got a boyfriend. Mm-hmm. So you won't hear from them for like 6 months. And when you do hear from them, it's always like, he's done this, he's done that. Celine gives me those vibes, and she gives me somebody whose whole self-worth is based around what one other person thinks of them, and specifically that person is a male who is attracted to her. All of her self-worth is based around that. And I think you can see that with Ryan, because we know Ryan is hot. But in the show, he's perceived as being not hot. I don't understand why, because he is hot, right? If I saw a guy like Ryan, I'd be, yeah, I want his number. But anyway,
enough. Ryan can be my daddy anytime.
Exactly. He can be my daddy, whatever. But the point is, in the show, in the universe, he is seen mm-hmm. as being lesser than Bray, lesser than Pride, Lex. And the love that he gives to Lean, she doesn't want that because he's lesser than. She wants one of those trophy boys. She wants a Bray. That's what she wants.
Luke is her new Bray.
Yeah, exactly. Luke is her new Bray. I mean, yeah. So I do kind of feel sorry for her because she's one of those people that is going to live quite a miserable life. And it's from her own dysfunction. So yeah, I do feel sorry for her because she's never going to let herself be happy. She doesn't know how to be happy.
I actually agree with you. Like, when I was thinking about that question, like, do I feel sorry for Celine? I feel sorry for her in the same way that you do. I feel sorry for her as just a human being who's never going to be able to exist on this planet and find happiness because she can't, she has no sense of self-worth. She has no sense of self in general. I feel sorry that she has to exist. Like, I just think that's sad. Just in general. Like, oh my gosh, you were failed so hard and now you're going to be a blight on society. But like, do I feel sorry for Celine personally? When, you know, Luke is like, hell no. No, I don't. But I do feel sorry for anybody who is like Celine.
Yeah.
Like, that's just sad. That's depressing that's you. Like, I'm sorry. You got screwed. Like, good luck.
Yeah, because Celine is talking about.
No. I do not feel an ounce of sympathy for Celine. She has ruined every single relationship, and not even any relationship, any little support of love that has been given to her by her friends and allies, and she's destructed that herself. I don't feel any sympathy for her. Like, I understand her history, I understand her background. She's done this to herself. And I don't feel sorry for her. Sorry, you've done this to yourself. You keep doing it to yourself.
Like, I'm not going to trouble myself for her, you know? Okay, let's put it this way. I love my brother. I love him. But when it comes to relationships, he is self-destructive. I feel sorry for him because he ruins these situations. He will find someone who loves him, wants to give him a family, and he'll destroy it, even though it's what he wants. And I feel sorry for him because he's not going to have this thing he wants, right? But not, I don't feel sorry in the sense that I'm going to trouble myself to help him or help him get out of the situation. Or if one of his current, you know, love interests comes to me for advice, you know, the advice I always give them is leave. Like, get the frick out of there. Like, I can feel sorry for him and still be like, yeah, but I'm not losing sleep over this.
Yeah, because it's more a nebulous sympathy. Because we've talked previously about the characters in this universe who have actually had better lives because the adults have died. So like Lex, who would essentially be thrown away, spending his life in juvenile detention. KC's quite similar. But Celine, there's no alliteration of any universe that Celine could be in where she'd ever be happy with adults, without adults. You know, she'd never be happy wherever she was.
It's so sad that she just assumed that Luke being nice to her meant he must have feelings for her. That really struck me, that she couldn't just accept that he was being a decent person. Because I thought, you know, if it were me, you know, and I had this guy, Luke, being nice to me, I would never cross my mind he has feelings for me. I would just think, oh, he's a nice guy. He's a nice person. That's all. That's all I would think. I'm going through some rough stuff. And he was being decent to me. I wouldn't be like, oh my gosh, he's so hot for me. It never crossed my mind because there's nothing Luke did that would set off those signal sparks in my head that, oh my gosh, I think he might be into me. You know, granted, I'm a little blind to those signals, but the fact that all he's done has been decent. The bare minimum of being a decent person is what Luke has done. And she's just like, no, it's me you love. And I'm like, girl, what?
And how on earth can she think like this? I mean, she seemed truly think like this and was fairly quick to point out that Bray was not into her. So why on earth does Celine think that Luke must be into her? It's so annoying.
Tamsin said, she likely, because we know her dad walked out, we know her mother was abusive, it's likely that Celine has grown up believing her value, the only use she is to a man, and the only use a man is to her, is romantic partnership. Mm. The only reason a man would be good to you is because he wants to be with you. We saw the way she reacted when she thought that Ryan wasn't sexually interested. She was very frustrated by that. For her, it was mixed signals. Mm-hmm. He couldn't be good to her, but also not want to bed her. She was confused by that, you know? So, yeah, I guess that's why, for her, any male being nice to her must mean he wants to get with her. But it's like, yeesh. Like, as a guy, you can't even be friends with Celine without it becoming this.
But yeah, good on Luke for instantly pointing out that he's just not into her.
Mm.
I did like the moment where, you know, she's in the prayer room and, you know, Lucas, he's having to face the fact that this is kind of my fault. I'm the one who told them and people like Celine that this is what they're supposed to do whenever they're confused about what's happening. Pray to Zoot, hold the faith, blah, blah, blah. And now he has to reap what he sowed by watching her do this thing that he told her to do. And I did like how when she's like, don't tell me you're losing the faith too, but then immediately is like, because she thinks that there's something between them, she immediately just goes, that's okay, you know, just hold me. Because in her head she's like, well, as long as we love each other, we'll get through it. Your lack of faith, we'll figure it out, you know. And I just like the way that scene played out, you know.
I was also mortally frightened for Luke, because when he put his head round, all I was thinking is, my God, he's got so much product on his hair that if one of those stray flames, he'd go up like a Roman candle, you know? So scary.
I did like the set with all like the melted wax showing that these candles are constantly burning and they'd just be replaced once they've melted down. I thought that was a nice little touch to the set design.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice place to see.
Mm.
Well, actually, Lex has done us a favor this time. We worked so hard on tactics, you know, we try to prepare for anything that the Guardian's going to throw at us.
Well, yeah, sure, after what happened to you guys at the beach.
But you can't be too cautious. Then when it comes time to strike, you miss it.
What, you mean this is the moment?
So, panel, the continued flip-flopping nature of the Rebels actually doing something versus just letting the Chosen destroy themselves, does this frustrate you? And did you appreciate that the off-screen nature of events was happening to finally push things forward?
I guess I'm just happy something's happening, even though I was like, wait a second. I thought the plan last episode was we're just going to let them fizzle out and destroy themselves. So we're left with like, what was the point of gathering all these people if we're not going to strike? And then this episode speaks as though we were just waiting for the right moment. So let's take advantage of whatever Lex is doing and strike. This is our moment. And I'm like, did you not forget what you said 24 hours ago, Bray? You know, but whatever, fine. Mm-hmm. They're going to do something. Thank you, Lex, for pushing the plot forward, I guess. You know, like, fine. I guess we're doing something. But yeah, I was frustrated. I was like, wait, you guys literally just said that you don't have a plan and your plan is to not do anything. Because, and fine, whatever. They're doing something. Okay, I guess. I don't think the writers knew what the plan was.
I just had to laugh at seeing Ebony go through that door into Bray and Amber's bedroom, as we've seen her do before with Bray. You know, it doesn't matter who he's in bed with. So her interrupting that was just nice added bonus.
It is. It's actually a nice visual that she will always be this insidious presence in his life, regardless of who he's with. So that's a nice callback to the relationship between them. You know, I like that shot of him and Amber sleeping peacefully. It's very cute. And then the way she slinks in, it just has an aura of, please keep your eye on her. You know, always keep your eye on her.
It's a nice bit of foreshadowing for what is coming, I think.
Yeah.
Even the way they wake up as though they can feel her presence. Because it's not like she's making any noise, you know, but it's like they sense, oh, danger's near, wake up, you know.
Beware of doom.
I like that. Yeah, the staging of that was nice.
So I'm sure you guys have covered this before, but I just wanted to say, you know, when we were growing up, when I was a young adult, we were constantly told not to sleep in our makeup. What is the state of Amber and Bray's skin? You know,
all of them, you mean? All of these kids.
Oh, the eco tribe cures all.
I love how they're The hair is perfect. The makeup is perfect. I mean, I literally have to roll over in bed and I've got bedhead, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's the one fantasy element of the show that you definitely have to just accept from day one. I mean, with the exception to season one, where the kids did look a little greasy and sweaty, you know, and their makeup didn't have as clean and polished as a look. You could believe that, yeah, like these look like dirty, nasty, greasy kids sleeping in their clothes and makeup because they have to, because it's just based on survival. But yeah, these people are way too beautiful to be sleeping with all that crap on their face all the time. Way too beautiful.
It's to save resources for makeup.
I do like the discussion of, you know, Bray and Amber. It makes sense that he would immediately prioritize what matters to him. I don't want you to fight, because now I know that we have something else to think about. It's not just the two of us. Otherwise, he would never have suggested that you stay back and not fight. Or maybe he would have. Who knows, with Bray. But I did like it, you know. It's an important discussion. It would have made no sense if they never had this discussion. So we know from the previous episode how important this life is to Bray. You know, where Amber was the one considering if they should even do it. And so, yeah, I was like, okay. I was fine with that. And I do like that she was like, look, buddy, I'm not staying behind because of this. That felt like Amber, you know, and telling him, look, this is my, granted, I don't like that she calls them the egos. I don't like it's this quick. Yeah. And already that's just what they're called, even by their own leader, that they're just the egos. And,
we're the ego tribe.
But I did like, I thought it felt in character for her to say, I get it. I understand your point. But I am not staying behind because I'm the one who talked people into fighting this battle. And I can't stay behind while other people are fighting it when I'm the one who convinced them to do so in the first place. Trudy did, but you know what I'm saying? That felt like her.
Yeah, but she was the one who said she couldn't go out and do certain things because she was pregnant.
Oh, well, inconsistency, thy name is season three. So, I mean, I'm just looking for the positives here. Because, yes, you're correct. She was the one who came back, and because she didn't want to tell him, she had to hint at the fact that I may not be able to participate. And the minute he's like, okay, I agree, you shouldn't participate, she's like, I'm a participating, and nothing is consistent.
You don't tell me what to do.
From episode to episode, we can only focus on what's in the episode.
Can I just say how much I hate this baby storyline? I just want to put that on record right now. I hate it. I hate it so much. Don't get me wrong. I don't hate the fact that Bray and Amber are having a baby. Somewhere down the line, that would have been great. But now, no. I hate it.
Well, they couldn't separate them again so soon, yeah. So they had to find some way to make this relationship interesting.
And, you know, it gave us the who's the daddy discussion.
Oh, God.
Look, in a better written story, they would have just focused on what people love about Bray and Amber. And just written them as a couple working together. That's what we liked about them. Their different opposing views on life and leadership and how we go forth and how we handle it. That's what we liked about them. But they gave up on that depth of their relationship a long time ago. These two, again, are defined by longing, separation, and the baby was just one more thing, an easy way to make them interesting without actually making them interesting.
I wonder. So if they knew when Amber returned and when they put in the pregnancy part, when they knew that part, I wonder if they knew that Dwayne was leaving at the point they put in the baby, just to make it more sad and more tragic that he'd be gone later.
I would hope not, but I can't give them any credit at this point. Maybe they did.
As we were saying earlier, I think it's a bit too early. I don't think they knew he was going to go yet.
I don't know. It's like bad romance stories. When the whole bad romance is based on abuse and toxicity, but then they finally get the couple together. They don't know how to make them work as a couple, so boom, someone's pregnant, so now they're forced to be together. You know, it just feels too much like that Amber's suddenly pregnant, you know. It's almost like they knew the story didn't have any weight.
Speaking of babies and that, it's, you know, they're getting ready to go out after the Chosen. Did it annoy anyone that Trudy was leaving Brady behind and going along with them?
She left her with a carer. There's a scene you get to see.
I know. But it's a part of me, even though I get why Trudy wants to be there when this guy's been taken down, a part of me just can't grasp the fact that he would let that baby out of her hands again.
Well, a healthy mindset is recognizing that sometimes you have to. Mm. And I just appreciate that they're treating Trudy like an actual person rather than her only identifier is that she's a mom.
Yeah. It's just...
She couldn't have brought Brady with her. That was...
No. She couldn't have taken her with her. That's more to... It was more to... Would she have stayed behind with Brady?
Well, I guess the thing is, she has to go because she is a linchpin in this. Any sort of chosen that's still hanging on, if the Supreme Mother turns up and is like, turn away from that false idol, you know. Yeah.
She wasn't necessary for the fight. Yeah, you could argue her saying, I am not needed here. I'm going to cause problems for you. I'm going to stay behind with Brady. But even though they didn't show it to us, which again, waste of potential, it's clear that Trudy has moved beyond that kind of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I need to do what needs to be done. And I need to make sure this war ends so that my daughter does have a future. That means I'm going out there to fight.
Yeah.
Even though, again, they didn't show us that development. That's clearly what she gained when she got her own mind back. So I just liked it because, again, often Trudy is treated as though her only identity is that she's Brady's mom, not a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think she needs to have done this for herself.
Mm.
Well, plus, obviously, knowing that Brady's future was secure with the Guardian defeated. But yeah, this was for herself, really.
She needs to face down her freaking abuser. She needs to go in there and have words with this man who tortured her for how long? I'd want to see him fall, too. I definitely would need to see him fall with my own eyes.
Mm-hmm.
But more than just that, though, I think it's important that she's seen by everybody to not be a member of the Chosen anymore. Because we see with May, with the way Ebony and Lex treat May, how that could easily get turned on Trudy. You know, she was front and center. So you can kind of understand from her side that she's showing that she is fully into this now. She is turned. Yeah. She's not a Chosen. She is a rebel.
Oh, yeah. We'll get to that little point in a minute. Mm-hmm. We'll come back to that. Okay, yeah. Before we get to this, so let's head back to the mall for the big reveal. Because the Guardian finally reveals to us his end game as he wills out a rather sophisticated time bomb, which will make them all a sacred place where they are all united with Zoot.
There will be time for you to make your peace with Zoot.
Can't you do something? Talk to him!
I can! I've tried! I can't get through to him!
Yeah, panel. How did you feel about using the bomb as a plot device, as well as all the other dropped and underutilized devices here, like Casey not actually having seen Zoot, Tysan not leveraging her true Supreme Mother position at all? What did you make of all of this?
Can I just say one thing? So Ellie said that they hadn't signed up for it. Ellie, you're a prisoner. You didn't sign up for any of these. That's part of being a prisoner. It's not an opt-in, opt-out situation. Did you pick the box that said you wanted to explode with the death cult? Yes or no? Oh my god.
That line could have been great if it had actually been a Chosen.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Mm-hmm. But again, since Luke is the only Chosen that gets to have a personality, we don't get that. You know what's so sad? I actually don't think the scene is that bad, but because of everything all season three has been, the way the prisoners have been chosen, how pointless their existence has even been to being there, Jaffa's disinterest in them, yet he still has them. I just don't care. Like, I was watching the episode going, yeah, blow them up. I don't care. Like, blow all of them up. I don't care at this point. I don't know why you've ever had them here. I don't know what your interest has ever been in them. You've never pursued anything with these slaves. You've never tried to turn them, convert them. You've never tried to simply just abuse them. You have been indifferent to their presence this whole time. So I don't even care that you want to kill them. It's also really pathetic because there's like five people there, two of which were Malmats, three if you count Celine. You know, I mean, it's just like, who cares? I feel like the plot end, like the plot lines of Casey admitting I never saw Zoo, and, you know, Tysan admitting I got in over my head, clearly didn't know what I was doing. It feels like a writer going, who cares? All of this went nowhere. We're wrapping it up and torching the script. Like, that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
I think I'm most disappointed by the Tysan thing because they had opportunities in the narrative to make it interesting. And like you say, they just give up. They're like, actually, she's got no control here. Like, she didn't know what she was doing. It's Lex, but it's minus sex again. You know, when she had tried to do his chakras and she just gave up on that. It's that, but it's not with sex. Yeah, so this is just how it is. And you're like, okay.
I'm just thinking, how on earth did this guy, who was against science and technology in the first place, figure out how to get them a bomb?
Well, he watched a couple of YouTube videos, I'm assuming.
on the big screen walls where they kept Bray, right?
Or it was, you know, Blue Peter, I don't know if you had that in your country, but maybe it was Blue Peter, How to Build a Bomb Week, and he just had it on VHS.
I mean, that actually made sense to me, because obviously they got Jack and the scientists, they're all working on things.
can you imagine they had Jack work out how to make a bomb to blow up his girlfriend?
I would enjoy that!
It is ridiculous, but I understand it.
Yeah.
I just think it's sad that this could have had so much potential,
yeah.
You know, but I don't feel anything. I don't feel fear for the characters. I feel no tension from the fact that there's a bomb. I mean, I don't feel any interest in the Guardian wanting to kill these slaves when he easily could have dispensed of them long ago at any point in time. You know, he could poison their cornflakes with antifreeze. I don't care. You know, I just... For me, it's sad that I feel nothing. Like, this is our conclusion to everything we've been sitting through, everything we've gone through. This is the conclusion, all these storylines within them all, and I feel nothing. I'm completely disinterested, and I just want it over with. Whether these people die, whether they're rescued, I don't care. I just want it over with. And that is something I feel like some of the writers might have felt, because that's what I'm feeling coming through the writing. They don't care either. They just want this concluded so they can move on. They're so done with this chosen storyline. They want to move on to something better. They don't care how they wrap it up. Like, these guys could blow up and I wouldn't feel anything. I might feel a little shock, but I don't care. And that's sad.
It's interesting that you say that, because when I watched the episode again today, I also felt the same way as you, Liz. But then I remembered how excited I was when I was a child and I watched this for the first time. And I was so excited. And I kind of remembered that. But as an adult watching it, you're just like, my God, this has been a road of attrition.
It would have been so much more interesting if we would have seen Jaffa purposely killing off, like, the Mallrats that they got rid of. If he would have purposely killed them off, at least make this make some form of sense why he wanted, you know, why he decided to blow them all up.
Yeah.
This is the difference between good writing and bad writing.
Mm-hmm.
You pointed out very good, Tams. I'm glad you did. As an adult, you're watching this and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't give a crap. But you could remember the way you felt when you were young watching it, how exciting it was. Now, it's easy to excite a child.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why children's programming is pretty easy to make. We don't require much when we're kids, but that's what made seasons 1 and 2 so special, because we were excited to watch them when we were young. And then as adults, when we revisit them, we still can see the value in that writing. We can still feel something, even though it's not even aimed at us anymore. It holds up, even though we've outgrown who it was meant for. That's good writing. Mm-hmm. And this is just proof that it's dumbed down. It is not trying to challenge its audience. It's not trying to give them something more. It's meant to entertain one age group, and they outgrow this.
Mm.
You know, like, I can watch season 1 and I feel things. I feel compelled. I think about stuff, because even though I was not the target audience, it holds up. The writing really matters, and it can stay with you for years, you know? And I just think it's sad that this is where we've come to, where they're not trying to write like that anymore.
No, I agree.
It would be different if the tribe had started, like, as just nothing but children's fodder. Yeah. I wouldn't be so hard on it. I'd be like, oh, it's just for little kids and they can have fun with it. But it starts so strong that it hurts to watch it descend the way it does.
Yeah.
And it's a show that had so much potential as well, because it has a storyline that doesn't depend on one thing. I mean, admittedly, they have the various themes going through. So season 1, it's the virus. Season 2, it's the rise of the chosen, and so on and so on. But the framework, the universe in which it exists, with no adult and set in this city in the shopping centre, that is such a strong premise.
I do wonder how much they've had to change from how season one and two were towards, you know, this season. I do wonder how much of that had to do with Channel 5 just wanting specific things or not wanting specific things.
Do you think the focus on Atlantis High might have also shifted the... So, because they're now producing two shows, do you think that might have played some, you know, why the writers weren't as on it as they were with series one and two?
It might have.
All I know is good writing transcends time, age, you know, special effects. I mean, there are stories we tell over millennia because they're good. They're good stories. We tell them over and over again because they're good stories. It doesn't matter how old you are when you revisit them. And to think the show started like that, and it's such a disappointment that to watch it go out the way it does and watch it do it gradually the way we have to because we do that. And it's just like, oh, I almost wish it had just started as nothing special, you know, rather than have to watch something that you love just sort of fade off and then have to accept what it's become, you know, so that you can still love it. But yeah, just it's, I don't know how it got here.
It's that gradual part that you said that really hurts, because it is slowly, bit by bit, chipping away.
Like, just pull the plug!
Yeah, I'd rather it had done that, but it's gradual, gradual, gradual.
I think it's going back to this series three. I totally thought that series four was where the train completely came off the tracks, but it starts here, which is really...
Say that last week, you guys.
Yeah, we were saying that last week, yeah.
Like, we blame season four for so much, but it was season three that started this mess.
We're going to find out that series four is really series as good as series one.
Whoa.
No, no, I won't go that far.
Yeah. That's a step too far.
I'm willing to admit that we may find more good in season four than we
find in this one
previously thought, because season three, because we're really dissecting it, has primed us to be disappointed. So I do feel like I'm gonna watch season four and find a lot more good in it and be like, oh wow, I'm actually impressed, because we've reached a point in the writing where we are literally saying things where, well, at least season four tried this. That's how bad this has gotten.
God.
That's where we are, Tamsin. So, but I don't think we're ever going to reach season one level writing, production, character work again. It's not going to happen.
It's not possible.
Season one was the Firefly of the tribe.
Oh, yeah.
I just think it comes back to that there are too many episodes.
I do think that gets in the way.
Oh, yeah. That's a huge problem.
I mean, I give him kudos for giving it a shot. You know,
never get that now. You would never get that now.
The budget soap opera, aimed at, aimed at kids? Like, that's what soap operas are. That's a huge act.
Well, I think that's why it works so well as a soap opera, because there were a lot of kind of soap operas in the UK aimed at kids. So stuff like Hollyoaks, which is aimed at teens, and you also had things like Children's Ward. And you had Grange Hill. But the reason why The Tribe is interesting is because it's set in a dystopian version of reality. And it's so far away from, like, it's not set in a school or, you know, in a village. It's like something you've not seen before. And it's also a soap opera. That's why it works.
Well, soap opera in general is just such an interesting genre. Yeah. You know, I mean, in the very beginning, it was simply so that housewives, you know, had something they could engage in with every freaking day. And like, to do that for kids the way they do this, it is impressive what they tried to tap. I gotta give them that, you know. I mean, name another show that is like The Tribe, where it's got the soap opera.
You can't
they don't exist.
I mean, maybe a push something like The 100, but it's not a soap opera.
No, it's not. It's a regular series. Yeah. It's a regular show with so many episodes and this huge...
And it's not aimed at such a young audience.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, and it also has a huge gap between seasons, and you know what I mean? So it's like, can you name anything else like the tribe? No. And unless you're going to, you pick something like, you know, General Hospital, Days of Our Lives. The, literally the only comparisons you have for the show format.
And I mean, I think the creator and the, was it the showrunner? They both came out of Coronation Street and EastEnders, which are two really big mm-hmm. soaps in the UK. And Coronation Street essentially came out of, so in this country, we had something called the Angry Young Men Movement, which was working class men who'd gone to university and became playwrights. And that's actually what Coronation Street, so the longest running soap opera on television in this country, that's what it comes out of. It comes out of experimental theatre mm-hmm. and experimental playwrights. And that's where the creators of this show came from. So I think, yeah, you're right. I mean, they're pushing the envelope.
I wonder if Ray came up against something that all children's programming comes up against. If you think about kids' shows, very few of them are able to keep writing for generations as they turn over.
Mm.
You know, Sesame Street comes to mind. It's one of the few where it's always aimed at the same age group and it just continues. It, you can age out of it, but then the younger generation can swoop right in and enjoy it as well. And it evolves with the changing times. But most children's programming is for its time and then it ends as its primary audience grows out of it and a new show is created for the next age group, you know. And I wonder if with the tribe, Ray came up against those circumstances where it's like, my audience is aging out of the show, but I do not know how to get a new audience without changing the show. I don't know how to evolve the show to attract a new audience so I can accept my old audience aging out and bring in a new one without losing the essence of what my show ever was and losing the quality of my show.
Mm.
Because even the best shows, you can see the difference between when they started and when they ended. But if it's a good show, it was able to keep its quality, even if it had to evolve, you know, and with the changing times. I wonder if that's something Ray had to struggle with.
We got season 4.
Yeah, we got season 4. So clearly he had to struggle with that.
That was the attempt to hold on to the younger generation, but keep it going.
And then we got the spin-off.
Oh, God.
Yeah. We'll circle back to this conversation, like, yeah, towards the tail end of season 3, because, yeah, this, it's a very interesting subject all around how the tribe is structured. And I definitely feel it could have worked in a standard format, but yeah, we'll come back to this another point.
I wasn't decent. Isn't it a little early to go barging into someone's bedroom?
You sleep in the basement.
Yeah? So?
We tend to make a lot of noise when we're, you know, so we sleep down here. That way we don't disturb the others.
See a panel. Alice and Ned, do you think the writer's attempts to bond these two is working for you?
For me, it actually is at this point in time.
Yeah.
I know it's horrible to say, but at this point in time, yes.
I agree with you, Sabine. I can kind of see what they were going for. However, I do just want to say, I think Ned, when he got stuck in the hole, he realised he couldn't get out and that he would never get through that hole. So I think...
Winnie the Pooh?
He thought, I'll just let my brother and sister go this one time. But no, I agree with you, Sabine. I can totally start to see this is what their initial intentions were for him.
They have good chemistry in the scene. I think it's actually well written and the actors are doing a fantastic job, and I see the potential of these two. It's not working for me simply because their setup is so terrible, and no, I don't buy that she would fall this quickly into such a cordial relationship with this dude, all because they have to dig a couple bricks out. And it does feel like Ned has changed overnight because they didn't build Ned up. So it's like, oh, suddenly Ned's a decent human being. What? Why? Why is Ned suddenly a decent human being? You never gave him a reason to be a decent human being because you never let us see who Ned actually is. You spent and wasted episodes showing Ned being the most disgusting, useless thing blithering around this mall.
Yeah.
Okay, and now you want me to believe that there's more to him when you never hinted at there being more to this guy? And you want me to believe that after everything he has shown Alice, including attempting to assault her sister, and she caught him doing that, that, oh, they're bonding now? Like, oh, all of that's water under the bridge, and she's having a great time doing this with this guy? It's a shame, because the scene is so well done and well acted and shows the potential of Alice and Ned and her falling for this guy. And the one thing they have in common is that they love their siblings more than themselves. Mm. But they wasted the setup to it.
It's a hard one for me. I actually, even at that age, I know a guy who's in character a lot like Ned. He can come across as a major jackass and then have moments like we see with Ned and Alice right now. So I do see how someone can come across as, you know, not caring about anyone while actually there's more to that person.
Of course, so can I, but that's not going to make me immediately be on board with that person. I'm going to need to see a lot more. I'm going to need to do a lot more than dig out some bricks with that person to think they're decent.
It's definitely a lot more than seeing him stuck in a wall and making me laugh to suddenly fall for him. You know what I mean? That's, it's going to be more than that. More than the slapstick.
Can I say that Ned always gave, well, Ned now gives me the vibe of a guy who listens to those podcasts that say things like, I'm a high value man.
Gosh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, I think it's a setup that ruins the scene. Because again, I like I said, I think it's a great scene. And these two are fantastic in it. And I really like the dialogue and I like their chemistry. But if, you know, you want me to believe that this is all it takes for Alice to be like, you know, he's not so bad, you know, or you want me, the audience, to just get on board with Ned when this is the first decent crap you've seen, you've had me see him do. I need more than that to just get on board with, oh, there's, he's an onion. He has layers. You know, I need some more. I would work more if Alice was less just like jovial with him. Like, we're pals. He's so amusing. Oh, he's so dumb, but he's amusing. I need more. I need more before I could...
I completely agree with you. You go...
In Alice's defense, how long do they claim these guys have been stuck together?
What, digging out that one thing in the wall?
They've been working on the wall for 24 hours.
Literally, yeah. 24 hours.
In this mall together.
It's like, yeah, and think about how he has behaved 99% of the time. They've been stuck in this mall together.
I know. So, but Alice is still a teenage girl, and the only guy in that whole building giving her any attention whatsoever that's not, hey, where's your sister? Can I sleep with her? Is Ned.
Alice isn't like that. She's not starved for attention like
You've
that.
You've already established that Alice isn't that kind of person.
Yeah.
If this was season three, the only Alice we knew, then fine. I'd be with you, Sabine. I would be like, oh, I guess that's how Alice is. But we have season two Alice to compare her to, unfortunately.
Yeah, okay? But season two Alice is, well, destroyed. She's gone. Because otherwise she wouldn't have tried to pimp out her sister. So clearly, Alice isn't the Alice that we know and love anymore.
So we just have to accept that Alice is dead? This is just a whole new person?
Can I just say something? Which is, going back to season two, though, didn't we kind of have this when... Do you remember when part of the barn fell on top of Alice?
Mm-hmm.
And Lex rescued her? But prior to that, they were having all those issues, and then they bonded over that, and she then became essentially the person who saved him. So maybe for Alice, this activation for Alice is the fact that in extremes, she is bonding with a person in this kind of situation, and she sees past all of the bullshit. Because in this extreme one moment, all the adrenaline is going, and she can see Ned or Lex for who they actually are. Is that
okay?
Anything like that?
I could give you points for that. I think you're actually making a very valid point. But thing is, they did it better with Lex.
Yeah.
Because they spent more time creating the relationship between her and Lex. So even before the barn, you could see them bonding, and then he pissed her off.
Mm.
and that's why she stormed off. And then they reconnect in the barn. Like, there are ebbs and flows in that relationship as they were getting closer. And so I buy her falling for Lex. I buy Lex convincing her he's a decent person because she has more than 24 hours of seeing him be a decent person. But I'll give you points.
I don't think she's instantly falling for Ned in this moment.
Well, her behavior, it's just...
Her
behavior is just like, he's such a jovial guy. I'm having a great time hanging out with him.
Yeah, it was very, ooh.
Yeah, but it's...
I need to reconsider this. The scene...
Nothing about him irritates me. Nothing about him disgusts me.
Yeah, but it's...
He's cool.
She isn't instantly giving off, you know, hearts and butterflies around her head.
Sabine, she's beaming, laughing. Like, let me grab the kids and get a Kodak moment. Like, this is, she's falling. This is heavy falling.
Yeah.
Like,
she's having a great time with this guy. There's no sense that she's still wary of him or distrustful of him or even a little disgusted by him. Everything he says, she's
working towards the same goal.
Sabine, you're not going to convince me on this. I'm sorry. I love you, but it's not enough. It's been working on this tunnel for like weeks, days. Give me 36 hours, maybe.
It's literally been a night because they make a mention of that.
I've been down there for a night, and I'm like, and all of a sudden they are on the stuff best terms, and I'm like, where did that come from?
Really? Yeah, come on.
So potentially, do we think that they're breathing something in as they're taking out this, you know, making them super high, and they're like, do you know what? I think we should start a nightclub, and we should call it Nalis.
Listen, are you blaming the asbestos?
I think I am. Yeah.
I will absolutely take that. Yes, let's blame it on that.
I will take it too. It's shoddy craftsmanship. I've told you this mall is a fire trap.
Well,
like, yeah, sure.
Who built this mall? Because sometimes it's a fortress, and sometimes it's got a sewer, and sometimes you can dig out the block with a fork.
If it's, yeah, a fork and a spoon, they've managed to dig out two big, massive bricks.
It's simple. Jack,
let's just skip that bit.
Jack made this wall in Minecraft, and...
Oh my god, none of them are real.
Oh, stop. Season 4 VR program.
If I can forget that the basement shouldn't ever exist in the first place, I actually think
where did that come from?
It just needed to be invented so they could dig out. But if I can ignore that, I actually do kind of like that little scene with the guards coming down there as if they knew this existed the whole time. It's kind of funny. Like, I have to admit, the comic timing for the actors is actually really well done, which is why I like Ned's actor so much. Mm-hmm. I really like his actor. I thought the timing was pretty funny. The way, you know, he swoops in, he's like, I was making myself decent, and this is where we sleep, and this is why, and Alice is forced to play along so that the guards don't investigate. That actually, again, I thought it was a funny scene. I thought the comedic timing was good. These two had really good chemistry, even if I don't like where this is going, and I don't think they've done a good job getting us there. It's not because the actors aren't doing their job, if I can make that clear. It's not their fault. No. They're doing the best they can with what they're given, and sometimes they completely shine, and the actors actually have good chemistry, even if it makes no sense the way this has been set up.
Yeah. It does make you wonder, I completely agree with you, and I was going to say, it does make you wonder if they actually had the two actors come in and do a chemistry test, because like you say, their chemistry is really good, and you can, from Bevan, who, you know, his performance as Ned, you can kind of see if we'd had less of the gross stuff at the start, that actually, no, this is kind of interesting. I would like to see more of this Ned. Which is a sentence I never thought I'd say. And I'm going to blame on the asbestos.
That's why I always say it. I'm like, I'm not mad at Ned. I'm disappointed in Ned. Because he had so much potential.
Yeah.
His actor is giving 100%, but he can only give what the director is asking him to give, you know? And if the director is like, oh no, we want you to be the worst creep ever, he gives it, even if it's detrimental to his character. But it's like, this would work much better if they had been hinting and dropping these hints that Ned is more than just a slovenly waste of space this whole time. We wouldn't be like, what the frick? When did you change up? And why? You know, and same with Alice. If they'd had a couple more moments where he wasn't just the worst human being in the world to her and everyone around her, I would be on board with her being open to seeing this good side in him so quickly, because she'd already had hints that it existed in the first place. I was watching this episode and I was just thinking, it was full of, I swear to God, I'm on a mantra now. I'm going to say this constantly. I watch the episode, I watch the scenes, and I think these scenes would work if the buildup to them had been better. Over and over and over again. It keeps happening.
I mean, this whole season just needed more workshopping in the writer's room to get these ideas, to get a timeline of events even. We're moving from A to B to C. And that's why I think series one works so well. It's because there's a clear, you know, there's a narrative they're working towards. There's a structure with, you know, the first half, the middle, the end, that's hopefully going to get us another series. But if not, we've got a great standalone. But yeah, for me, it just feels like there was just not enough work going into the writer's room to make sense of these things.
Can't argue with that.
You weren't thinking of leaving, were you, May? Just when the fun's about to start?
What's it to you, Ebony?
Well, I just think you should have a chance to clear your name properly, that's all.
I've already cleared my name. I rescued Brady, remember?
Oh, come on, you did that for yourself.
This isn't going to be over just because those losers up there finally give themselves up. There's going to be a whole lot of questions. Like, who collaborated with the enemy? Ever heard of war crime trials?
All while seeming to forget, obviously, that Ty Sands on whose role in all this. But, the main question is, do you feel that these conflicts are genuine? Or are they all just a ploy for time?
No, I don't think they're genuine. Not for me personally, because the thing about Ebony is I would have thought that she would have wanted May to go with them so that she could, I don't know, throw her down on some Praetorian guard's blade or something like that, make sure she was dead. Because the last thing you would want is, if you can't trust this person, why would you leave them behind? You'd want to keep them in front of you, because for all she knows, she's still a chosen spy, and that they're just going to be, they'll go back to the, you know, the rebel dugout, and the chosen will be there.
For me, Ebony not wanting May to come along just kind of felt like she wanted May to be as far away from Pride as possible, because, you know, they've been, she's been fighting for his attention. So that's why it felt to me like she didn't want May to come, because of that. Much more as, you know, for not trusting her. It just felt like an excuse from Ebony's side.
I think the conflicts work based on Lex and Ebony's personalities. Of course Lex has a problem with May. May keeps reminding him where his wife is and what she doing. Like, she can't help it. Okay, this is how this episode starts, with her starring trouble and him marching off because she reminded him, guess what your woman is? Guess whose bed she in? Okay, so of course Lex has an issue with her and he wants to get back at her because she's throwing his inability to have his wife by his side in his face. And of course Ebony has issues with May. Ebony has issues with pretty much any female. And, you know, as Sabine has just pointed out, May is competition for Pride that was just set up for us. So it works on that context that these two would just find someone that they can let their frustrations out on, and May is an easy target. But in the grand scheme of things, I think it has less meaning because it's Lex and Ebony who have the nerve to be calling out May. When you think of everything Lex and Ebony have done and have been guilty of themselves and how they have treated people and what they've put people through, who cares what May did compared to the two of you? You know, like, I think this could have more meaning if it were other people who were affected by the Chosen showing their anger at Chosen collaborators. Mm. Other people who have suffered because people like May joined the cause. But because it's Lex and Ebony, who cares? Who cares about their grievances?
You know, had it been Amber who would have said, well, thanks to you, Dal died, so I don't trust you going with us. Sure.
Yeah.
That would have been a totally valid point, but
Amber forgot that Dal existed, so yeah. It's like, I get it. It's fine. It eats up some time in the episode, and it does set the stage that things aren't going to be pretty for May when this is all over, because people have these petty conflicts with each other. But in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that these three are, you know, bickering with each other. We feel like Bray. We're like, who cares? Shut the frick up. You know what I mean? And I do wish we could have, you know, had somebody who had been genuinely harmed by the Chosen expressing these things, you know, and we could see the actual harm May had done to other people, you know, not May specifically, but collaborators had done to the other people who were just trying to survive, but would never have thrown anybody under the bus to do so. So it's just kind of like, okay, it's fine, but it doesn't mean anything at the end of the day.
Because May kind of becomes an avatar, doesn't she, for the collaborators?
Mm-hmm.
And I would also argue, though, was May... I've never felt that in Series 2 or Series 3 that May was actually a mole rat. No. But maybe that's just me.
No, she magically became one.
I mean, she got voted in.
Mm-hmm.
She did join them.
Yeah.
You know, but then when the Chosen came, and that's the mole rat's fault, not May's. But, you know, when the Chosen took over, and she was like, oh, great. I thought I had gotten in with this great tribe, but they're just as dumb as everybody else. She found herself in a situation. What loyalty does she have to them? She was like, I want to survive. I'm joining the Chosen. And she tried to convince the others to do it with her. Like, let's just do this, you know? And it made sense that May was the first to be like, I'm out. Let's do this.
And let's not forget, out of all of them, I mean, May has already told them before the Chosen openly invade. She's already told them she was with this tribe for a while. You know, they fed her. They kept her alive.
She warned them about Trudy and then was convinced, oh, I guess I got that wrong. I'm sorry, you know.
Mm. And I totally agree with both of you when you say about Ebony, but I'd like to throw in Lex as well, because Lex has had it in for May since she stole his boot. Let's be real. He's been looking for an opportunity to get back at her for all of that time. And yeah, I think this is personal because he hates her. And there's also an element of this that's, I would say, got a sexual element with Lex and May, that he wants to kind of...
Well, they did have this night.
Yeah. But there's something else going on there as well with him.
It just loses meaning when it's these two getting on May's case. And it would mean a lot more if it were other people who do not have Lex and Ebony's history of screwing people over, actually upset at May's presence, knowing that she was so quick to join the Chosen and would throw anybody under the bus to elevate herself in the Chosen. But because they shrunk the world down so small that these are basically the only people who exist in it, and no one else does, and no one else is affected... It just doesn't matter. It, you know, they're just killing time.
Yeah.
What you are about to do is wrong. This was never part of Zoot's plan. The Guardian has tricked you. What is to be gained from this? Since we'll all be with Zoot in good time, how do we spread his word throughout the world if everything ends here? The Guardian has taken Zoot's teachings and distorted them to suit his own purpose.
So yeah, what did you make of Luke and the Guardian's war of words here?
So firstly, all I could think was, can someone get Luke a microphone? This is a mic off.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, all I could think when the Guardian was talking about being an adult is, you, this from the man with the receding hairline. I can't believe you being serious now. Don't trust him. He's an adult. Come on. The only adult that survived was you.
Oh my gosh. I think this would have been a great speech from Luke if he wasn't just addressing the Praetorian guards.
Mm.
You know, but again, we have been deprived of knowing how any of the other Chosen feel about what the Guardian has done all this time. And so the only people he's telling are the diehards who don't care what he has to say.
Yeah.
He's preaching to the choir. Yeah, the Morads already agree with him. The Praetorians are not going to be moved by anything he says. This was the wrong time. You should have given the speech a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Ellie told you to. But what he says, I do like his speech. I like the way he's careful with his words. he speaks as though he's talking to believers and couching this resistance in the way a believer could understand it, could divest it, and be like, oh, okay. It's just unfortunate that they have him speaking to people that already been established to us, and all of them aren't going to hear this. They're not receptive to anything he's saying. It's kind of a waste of time, but valiant effort, Luke. It's a little late, but at least you gave it a shot.
This would have been a much greater speech had he given it either when Trudy escaped, you know, when the Guardian wanted to kill off the Supreme Mother, or, you know, even before this, when he made Tysanne Supreme Mother.
Mm, yes.
No, it's...
That would have been the right time with Tysanne.
But unfortunately, he didn't do that.
No.
So, yeah, I guess I'm just glad he's saying it now, because better late than never. But, yeah, unfortunately, wrong crowd to say it to.
Yeah.
Because these guys were willing to lock you up. They've been searching them all, trying to find you, Luke.
And there's not even a sense that they're at all even tempted by his suggestion. Whereas I think, like you were both saying, if there had been more Chosen in them all to see some of the Chosen go, actually, I'm with Luke on this and I don't actually want to blow up. So, and just maybe to have had him, you know, with the Phoenix behind him and maybe a small gathering of Chosen coming around him slowly as they agree with what he's saying. That might have lended something to the scene where you get this sense of it's one ideology versus another.
You've just hit the nail on the head. That's one big reason why this has failed so badly, because we don't have any other Chosen. No normal Chosen members are even left in the mall. It's just the Praetorian Guards. So, like, remember in the when he was being locked up, we had Luke saying the name, was it Joshua, the guy who he was close to and he helped let him out. Like, we none of them are here. We have no other reference. So it's just the Praetorian Guards. That's why this makes this whole scene just fall flat for me. Because
we don't have them.
We've got no one.
We don't have Rosie. We don't have
literally no other Chosen.
We don't even have the people who, you know, when much early in the season, when, you know, with Brace failed burning at the stake event, we had that moment where Trudy wasn't allowed to see Brady, and he came in with Brady and said, there are several of us who think the Supreme Mother shouldn't be treated this way. Where are those people? He should have gotten them to join him long ago.
Yeah. And how much more exciting would it have been if it had been the Chosen start to fight the Praetorians, the Mole Rats are fighting, suddenly, you know, Amber and Trudy are appearing at the gates, you know, people are trying to get out. How much more exciting would that have been?
Mm-hmm.
And you've still got the bomb threat, because the Guardian's the only one who can stop that from going off. So you've still got him in this position of power, but you've also got everybody else kind of scrabbling around to try and stop this from happening. I just think that would have been really exciting.
Yeah.
And also, you know, because we talked about the May situation and May becoming an avatar for the Chosen. And that is, like you both rightly said, is because there are no other characters. We've shrunk it down to such an extent. And Tysanne, obviously, is going to get protected by Lex. And
Celine,
to some extent, she doesn't get called out. Celine does get called out. Trudy does get called out a bit, but the one who really gets the brunt of it is May. But if you had some Chosen who defected at this point, you could have had one of those end up being the sort of avatar for what happens when they defect and things like that. So again, it just makes more people in the world, even if it just been like a guest star that you have.
Even if they would have just had, you know, we had Celine with all the pregnant women.
Exactly.
Even if those and Rosie and whoever else it was that was looking after them at that time, even if they would have still been at that mall, it would have been different, because she would have been a great character to go for. I didn't sign up for this.
It's just so frustrating, because it could have been a really exciting scene.
Mm-hmm.
And that showdown between Luke and the Guardian, the thing we've been waiting for quite a while, like you said, the time they should have done it was with Tysanne. That's when Luke should have rage quit. But we've waited now for too long. The audience he's given to do not really care. They don't care at all. They're not even listening to it. So, like, what is the point of this?
Mm-hmm. Late to wrap up some of the storylines. You know, they waited too late. They set up things, and then they did nothing with them. They just let them hang in limbo. And then they finally reached this part where it's like, oh, crap, we never did anything with this. We never did anything with that. We never did anything with Casey being the Oracle. We never did anything. Let's wrap this all up. And Luke had time when he could have given this speech to other Chosen. Like, how about the minute Jaffa kicked, you know, made him, you know, fired him? Luke could have been talking to other Chosen right after that. Instead, he decides, I'm going to move into the mall and I'm going to do nothing. I'm going to do nothing. I'm going to move into the mall and I'm going to do nothing. I'm not going to warn anybody. I'm not going to talk to my fellow Chosen. I'm focused solely on Ellie and I'm going to do nothing. Now, granted, you know, he was dealing with a crisis of faith, but the point is they didn't do anything with it. So now the time to give a speech is when it matters the least. There's nobody who would listen or be receptive to this speech. And that feels like almost all the storylines. It's just lots of ideas, but no idea how to get us to the end point of those ideas or how to wrap them up. And so they become a jumbled cluster of, oh, yeah, in that Casey Oracle thing, he was faking. Doesn't matter that he admits it now, has no impact.
Mm.
You know, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter that Tyson admits, I was wrong. Sex wasn't going to cure him. Doesn't matter now.
This kind of feeds back into the last episode I was on, which was when we were talking about when Trudy, Amber, there's the reuniting with the baby, Lex finds out Tyson's not dead. This is basically the same as that, where the pacing, mm-hmm. you wait until the last couple of minutes just to tell us all this, your info dumping. And the other thing is, like, why did Casey not say, look, I've just spoken to Zook, and he said he doesn't want you to do this. He actually wants you to let them all rats out and then blow yourself up. That's what he just told me then.
I know, you're the Oracle, Casey. The Praetorians might actually listen to the
exactly.
Oracle.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. And we know Casey's clever enough to think of something like that, but at the end of the day, it's a writing problem. They didn't know how to end this story. And I don't think they really, as you said, Tamsin, they didn't workshop the season. Mm-hmm. They had things they were interested in, and there were things I will always give them credit for putting the work in. But overall, it's a case of the sums are greater than the whole. The whole story doesn't come together, but there are some bright spots in it. Mm-hmm. That's all you got.
It feels like a lot of their focus was, how are we going to bring Amber back? And mm-hmm. what are we going to do with that relationship?
I don't want to talk about it.
I mean, I was just about to say that didn't even have any focus. They didn't know what they were doing with that.
Yeah. Well, I think they did in that initial when they first brought her back. When you have that, and I like that set piece, you know, when she first appears. But yeah, even that lost any sort of coherence. Yeah.
You know, this season reminds me of, okay, so many of us have done role playing in the tribe over the years.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all are familiar with this phenomenon. You hook up with somebody and you guys start coming up with a plot you want to write between your characters, and you're super gung-ho and excited about it, and it starts off strong. But then because writing takes time, real life gets in the way, it base between your posts grows greater and greater, the story you were so excited to explore and write just sort of loses its steam.
Yeah.
This entire season is that. It's role-playing and fanfic that just starts off bright, clearly a lot of interest, and then just loses steam. Almost every storyline, not everyone, just almost every storyline suffers from that phenomenon. Exciting at first, had an idea, super eager to get it started, and then, oh yeah, we did that thing, didn't we? Did we set that thing up? What do we want to do with it? I don't care about it anymore.
All right, on that note, that brings us to our final thoughts of the episode.
What are you trying to achieve? What are you trying to prove, Guardian? You think you'll be remembered for this? You are so wrong. When all this is over, you'll be forgotten in a week.
Not true!
But it is true. I've been talking to the kids you brainwashed, and you have no support left. When you die, the memory of Zook dies with you!
So yeah, what did you make about the atmosphere battles are spared on these scenes, the Morats continued attempts to reach the Guardian, and the final appearance that we saw of Bray dressed as Zoot.
A quick question, which is, did Ebony know that the Guardian's name was Jaffa?
Yes.
Yes, he did. She was in, right. At school, she was in the same class as he was.
She's also the first character to refer him to him as that in season two.
Okay, yeah. So the reason why I asked this question is something that annoyed me, which was when Amber was at the grill, I kind of wanted her to deadname him. Instead of calling him the Guardian, I wanted her to call him Jaffa to sort of show you're not the Guardian, you're just some kid.
Mm.
Okay, I'll take this point by point. I think May kissing Pride was cute. Go get you some, girl. You don't know if you're going to survive. You don't know if this place is going to explode. Kiss those lips. I'm with you on that. I like the expression he has of a little surprise, like, oh, wow. You know, that was cute. I like that. That was adorable. I also think it's funny that every time they designate a plan, no one says where Pride's supposed to go. That makes me laugh every time. They're like, they'll be like, okay, Amber and Trudy, you go here. Lex and Ebony, you with me. Nobody decides where Pride goes. He just kind of decides for himself, I guess I'll follow you guys. And it happens like twice. It cracks me up each time. Amber and Trudy going off in the Guardian was cool, but I wish that was more Trudy's moment because that's their confrontation. Yeah. Amber has nothing to do with the Guardian. I don't like him addressing her as though he knows who the frick she is.
I hated that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh. I was like, why would...
is Amber important to him?
Exactly. I don't... He's had these people in his mall for ages and barely knows who they are or gives a crap, but he knows who Amber is. Okay, whatever. Stop trying to make this Amber's battle. All because, you know, in the beginning of season three, Pride was like, Amber will win this battle for you. Shut up, Pride. Anyway, I wish that would have been more focused on Trudy because this is she in the Jaffa's confrontation. I love what she has to say to him. And Tysan, I would have really loved if it wasn't that she actually believed in the gentle soul, but more she's just saying what needs to be said to try and get this guy to give them the code. I would have liked that. A little more doubt from her. And I like Casey's plan, but okay, you guys, I want you to look at Tysan's face when Bray first shows up dressed as Zoot.
Yeah, I noticed that as well.
Hilarious.
She gives such like side eye, like ew. Like it was so judgy.
Well, this is low.
Ew, oh my gosh.
Really desperate now. That's what she was getting.
Are we doing this to a mentally disturbed
person? I think she was just thinking, like, can this work? I think...
yeah.
Her expression is fantastic. I love that. I wish I cared more about this plan. You know what I mean? I wish I gave more of a crap. Because I kind of just feel like this is our conclusion. This is what we've been building to, just Bray dressed up. I mean, don't get me wrong. I actually really love the idea of Bray dressing up as his brother. You know, it says a lot of something that Bray has to come to terms with. He never wanted to accept what his brother was made of, what his brother became. That's kind of cool that he has to dress as him to confront this person who idolizes his dead brother.
Yeah.
He has to be what his brother was, just accept that reality. That's kind of cool, but it still feels a bit like a fizzle. Is it just me that it's just like,
no, it is.
I've been waiting for some big conclusion to everything, and it's just Bray shows up, scares him, and we know that Jaffa will just defuse the bomb. You know, like, really? All the armies, all the buildup, all the we gotta find people, we gotta talk to the tribe leaders, we have to wait and wait and wait so we have enough people, and that's all it took? Like, and again, we all know it doesn't work because it implies that Jaffa is so crazy that he would believe it's Zoot. And then we learn later he's not crazy. So,
yeah,
it feels disappointing, underwhelming, I guess.
Can I just say that this whole conclusion just so disappointed for me. I was so happy that Bray trusted KC. That was the biggest point for me. That's kind of crazy.
Probably the best point that moment, that character development, where KC says, trust me just this once, and Bray does. Like, oh, Wow.
Was wow. That was actually the best bit for me.
If you break it down, it means that Casey actually saved everybody.
Yep.
Yeah.
And doesn't he always? Doesn't,
again, yeah. And he, yeah. Again, he does.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He never gets credit.
No.
But he does.
Wow.
But it's...
I feel so sorry for Casey. That, he never gets his flowers.
Nope. Casey, that kid just... He went, okay, this guy's insane. I managed to fool him into thinking I was his oracle.
Mm-hmm.
No, not even Tysan, as his new Supreme Mother, can talk him down. He might just only listen to Zoot. And, well, he has the goggles, he has the hat.
Yeah.
Because he's been selling them.
Literally the only payoff we get to him selling the Zoot goggles and stuff.
Yeah.
It's the only payoff we get is that he has this crap in his collection somewhere. Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I think that was coincidental. I don't think that was planned.
I don't think it was planned either.
No. Just worked out. But
I was just going to say, it speaks to how intelligent Casey is, that he works all of that out in such a short space of time. And I know, like, there are a lot of intelligent characters on the show, but I don't think, like, Casey's ignored, but he worked that out so quickly. He was like, A, B, C, right.
Yeah.
So it has its moments, I'll give it that. But yeah, overall, I feel it's really underwhelming to everything we've been doing, everything we've been building to, everything we've been waiting for. I will say I do like the moment where Ned and Alice tell the kids, we do have a hole, okay? And at least some of the little ones will be able to make it out.
Mm.
But we're going to need a distraction. And Alice and Ned are like, well, let's do it. If it means one of the kids gets out of here, then let's do it. I actually did like that moment.
Yeah.
Where they're like, okay, let's fight. And they, you know.
And they trust Casey to lead the kids out.
Yeah. Right. You know, Alice is like, Casey knows a way, so just follow him. I did like that moment, that little moment of them trying to fight the guards so that the kids could get away through the hole they built in the basement that shouldn't exist. You know, I just thought that was nice. And of course, you know, they don't succeed. But hey, they tried. I'd rather them fail because they tried rather than they fail because they never bothered, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Can I just ask, though, when all this fighting was going on, what was Ellie doing? Was she just, like, standing to one side? Because she didn't seem to get involved, nor did
Remember,
she run away.
Ellie's not a fighter.
No, but I mean...
I'm not a street fighter.
You know, come on, at least dodge around. Run around, make him chase you, you know?
Exactly. Cause a distraction, Ellie.
Run up towards the Guardian, you know? Run up towards Tysan.
So the kids have... Right, give the kids a better chance of getting away. Don't just leave it to your poor sister and Ned to do it all.
Yeah.
And then
I just loved when Alice threw off all those guards.
Yeah, I loved that.
She had such a Ryan energy to her at that moment.
She was great. She should have kept going. She shouldn't have worried about Ned. She should have just kept going, because nobody really worries about Ned. Just, yeah, let him go.
The only person who had an excuse to do nothing was Celine. Because they have established that her headspace is that she can't make heads or tails of anything that's happening. And when, like for example, when Trudy speaks up and calls him a false god and calls him out, they pan specifically to Celine's expression and how confused by all of this she is. She's the only one who has the right to be sitting there waiting for the bomb to go off because she don't care, you know, and just watching all this go down. And being like, this might as well happen. You know, like, she's the only one who has an excuse to do nothing.
But I agree with you when you said that it should have been Trudy at the grill with the big speech. Because I think following on from the Guardian and Luke having their mic off and then Trudy turning up and then kind of getting a vibe that the Praetorians were like, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I agree. Also, thank God Celine was there, because none of those other characters, bar Tysan, would have known who the hell Amber was. Thank God Celine went, Amber, it's you! You know, because...
I half expected her to scream again.
I'd also say that Amber could have stood at that grill and gone, I've been exploded once before, and I survived. I can't say the same for Xandra. There's bits of her still up on that mountain.
Oh.
Do you want to come to me? Do you want to go toe-to-toe with me, Zappa? Because I will come out of this.
Fire cannot kill a dragon.
Yeah, fire cannot kill a dragon. I am the phoenix of the phoenix mold. Oh my god, why the hell wasn't she called phoenix? Jeez, sorry.
Oh my god.
I mean, no offense to the Zandra fans. I didn't mean what I said. Okay.
Did you Zandra fans hear the way she blasphemed this poor girl's death?
I was going to say, I've never been convinced that Zandra's actually dead, if I'm honest.
Stop it. Stop.
Well, you're just waiting for her to turn up with Alexis' child.
I'm just waiting for the reveal to be she's living just her best life on a beach somewhere sipping cocktails.
With Ryan.
Oh my god.
With Ryan. Oh my god, yes.
All because Celine showed her a picture of a child that she and Lex apparently had. She was like, screw him.
Well, let's be real. Wouldn't it be Lex and Tyson?
Oh, yeah, that would definitely work. 100%. This has its moments. But they're overshadowed by just everything, you know. But I will give those small moments their points. I don't entirely hate it. I'm just underwhelmed by all of it. And I'm just glad we're like, it's over. It's finally freaking over. That's how I feel. I'm just like, fine, we're done. You know, because it didn't really do that much with the Mallrats being imprisoned or why Jaffa would want them to be imprisoned. Or he didn't do anything with it. It was just a set dressing. Mm-hmm. It just captured them where they needed to be so that you could work on the interpersonal love stories and whatnot. That's what it feels like. It feels like the Mallrats were trapped for that reason. So they would be stationary. But other than that, it didn't serve a purpose, you know?
Mm. It's not even like, and I mean, Sabine, you'll know if this is the case or not, the chosen expert. It's not even like having the Mallrats in the Mall was kind of like there always has to be a Stark in Winterfell, that to activate some cosmic Zoot power, you have to have the people who were witness to his death at the site of where he died. But it's not even like that, because like only Celine was there.
I mean,
and who wants to just watch Celine wandering around the Mall?
It's like if he had been actively killing off Mallrats,
yeah,
then it would make sense that Chloe's gone, Patsy's gone, because they witnessed Sue dying.
Why did he never try and get Lex more, is my question to that. Because surely the set piece would have been killing Lex.
The murderer.
Yeah.
That thought crossed my mind when the moment we see Lex going towards the Mall, and he comes across a couple of Chosen, and they look at him totally terrified.
Mm.
I was like, did they realize this is Lex, the guy who killed your false god?
Mm.
Or at least as the story goes.
It would be great if they did, if they'd ever emphasize that sort of thing.
Yeah,
but again, the Chosen aren't allowed to have a voice. So we only all we can do is imply what those Chosen are thinking and feeling at that moment, that they're huddled around this garbage fire and Lex shows up and they just disperse. I guess I was just, when we get to this point, I'm, you know, even back in the day, I was just feeling like it's finally over, finally done. And I was hoping, you know, we'll finally get Ryan back. We'll get the girls back. You know, we'll find out where they were sent. We'll get Jack back, you know. Like, that's all I could really think about, is that this is over.
I was still kind of hoping we would find out what happened to, yeah, I'm going to say it, what happened to Danny.
Don't say it again.
Danny, no, I agree. Yeah, let's
have
some. Let's
find that
book.
Sabine, it's been 32 episodes.
I know,
she ain't coming back.
But even for drama's sake, I would have loved that moment with Danny back while Amber's already knocked up with Bracelet.
Sabine, I will tell you, girl, I admire you. You never fail to let me down when it comes to holding a torch for things that it's like, that is so dead and gone. Wow. I didn't think we would be here and you'd be like, I was still hoping. Like, no, she's not going to say it.
Of course I.
You know what I love about that, though? I love it because it speaks to her disdain for Amber. Like, I respect that. Like, she hated Amber so much that she welcomed Danny with open arms. And even though Danny was buried, dug up, burned, buried again, she was still holding out that Danny would make a comeback. And I'm like, you know what? I have to respect that. Calling all fans, justice for Danny, okay? The most absurd time she should have come back in the series. We want to hear it. Comment on it, okay? I don't care how crazy it is.
I was going to say, I know that you guys don't do merchandise, but I think if you should do a line of mugs and t-shirts and key rings and all of that stuff just with Justice for Danny, series 4 and 5. Bring back Danny.
Yeah, I want to hear all the crazy times Danny should have been the one, should have come back.
That's why Bray never returned.
It shouldn't have been Moon. It should have been Danny who found him.
Okay, on this crazy note, that brings Series 3, Episode 32 to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast, please send a message on my Facebook page, on my website, or on Instagram, thetribe.co.uk. So we'll see you next time for Episode 33. Until then, bye.
Bye.
I've just had a message from Casey, and he said he's got a range of t-shirts in... Please bring Danny back. It's been 20 plus years. Goodbye.
Bye.